You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Pac-12 is getting in on all of the college football fun. At least they hope to. It looks like they're going to get rolling on November 6th, so we get all of the Power 5 action coming. But they're not alone in that fun. Not to be outdone, the Mountain West has also figured out they're going to get going. They're going to get going a little earlier, in fact, October 24th. And last but not least on all of the things coming up, Miami has a star quarterback, which has Hurricane fans beyond excited. You'll hear from him. That's coming up all today on a stacked edition of College Football Live. More teams playing means we need more of us to talk about it. We are stacked today for College Football Live. I'm Jason Vince, joined by Jim Moore, Brad Edwards, David Pollack. Gentlemen, all of the Power 5 have decided they want to come to the dance, and we're here for every ounce of it. So before we get your thoughts on it, we're going to hear from a little bit of expertise. As the Pac-12 has decided that they're going to play football, they figured it out. They're going to give us an all-conference schedule. So at this point, we know that they'll be playing starting November 6th. For the conference championship game on December 18th. This is what Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott had to say specifically about what changed as they made the decision to play.
First and foremost was the medical guidance, you know, given the spread of the virus in some of our markets in the West. There was a requirement that we have daily testing. There were concerns about heart disease and other things. So we had a real breakthrough a couple of weeks ago when we were able to strike a deal with the leading manufacturer of these rapid point of care tests that will allow us to move to daily testing with results in 15 minutes. But the other hurdle we had, John, was in some of our states, California and Oregon in particular, state and county public health authorities wouldn't give us approval to practice or to play. And that started changing once we had access to these daily tests. Really within the last week, that all came together. So we needed a lot of stars to align, and our campuses wanted to go about this in a very measured, careful way with health and safety in mind. And I'm happy we got to that point to still be able to participate in this football season, start men's and women's basketball, same time as every other league in the conference, as well as some of our other sports.
Obviously, we're starting later than others, and potentially we have less games than others. But I'll tell you, in talking to my colleagues in the other conferences and looking at how the first few weeks have gone, none of my colleagues can look in the eye and tell you how many games each of those teams is going to play in the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, or otherwise Notre Dame is having to sit out this week. No one knows how many games they're going to play, and there's going to be a wide variety of resumes.
There you have it. The Pac-12 has joined the party. Nearly 2 months ago, the Pac-12 players posted a list of demands, including adequate testing. Just 9 days later, the conference postponed all sports until January 1st. And then last night, the Pac-12 voted to move forward with the fall football season, targeting November 6th as its start date. So patience is a virtue. Let's get the guys' reactions from this. We'll start with you, Pollack. What do you think of the way the Pac-12 has handled this entire situation?
Well, I'm glad they got it right. Now, listen, you mentioned it. I think it's important for everybody to know it's not like every other state. And when the state closes down, it ain't like they're going to be like, hey, Larry Scott, you want me to open it up for you? That's not going to happen. So, I mean, I think they stuck with it. They got the daily testing. Once they got the daily testing, they got this thing turned around. So, listen, kudos to Larry Scott. It's not an easy job. And there's a lot of hurdles that the Pac-12 had. More than any other conference that they had to jump through. So I'm glad they're joining the party. I don't know if seven's going to be enough this year because I don't know that they'll get seven or eight games. Who knows how many games everybody will get, but I'm glad that we have all of college football now joining the mix.
I think it's interesting. You know, when you look at the decision, over and over, the Pac-12 is following the lead of the Big Ten. And everything Pollack just said, everything Larry Scott said, is true, but I'm still left to believe the number one factor was that the Big Ten decided to play and they didn't want to be the only Power Five league left out. I'm glad for the players and coaches that they're going to be able to do so. My big question now is, are they also going to follow the Big Ten's lead in having very stringent guidelines for what it's going to take to step on the field as far as a really low number of positive COVID tests? The other three power leagues don't have that right now. Given the number of games that they're able to fit in, maybe, you know, every game that gets knocked off of there is going to make it more and more difficult for them to contend for a spot in the playoffs. So if they follow the Big Ten in that way, man, they're going to have a challenge.
Coach, you know this conference better than any. What's your reaction to it from your standpoint?
Well, I think David is exactly right in that the protocols for playing here are so much more stringent than other parts of the country. And that's because of the, as Larry said, the state and county officials and some of the restrictions that they put on it. But they've have relaxed them. They've met them. It's not like you can just call the governor and say, hey, we want to play football. And Governor Newsom says, hey, okay, go play football. That's not how it works on the West Coast in California and in Oregon. So the road to recovery, the road back to playing was a little bit more difficult on the West Coast than it was in other parts of the country. But Larry Scott and the ADs and the presidents and chancellors, they stuck with it. They followed the science, as people are saying right now. They've got protocols in place, and I think that they're doing it the right way. I think they'll move slowly. They'll move carefully. They'll be ready to pivot. But I think that I don't know how stringent the testing protocols will be or what the restrictions that they'll put on them. I think we'll find that in the next couple of days. But, you know, I thought the Pac-12 was slowly moving towards irrelevancy. You know, I thought that, you know, they haven't been represented in the college football playoff very often. They weren't playing. They weren't getting any talk that we play late at night out here. And so this at least puts them back in the conversation, which is good not only for the Pac-12, but it's good for college football.
Pollock, you want to follow that?
And listen, one thing to caution everybody on, you know, listen, when the Big Ten stopped football, the Big Ten was still very much, teams were at facilities, teams were training. That hasn't been going on in California. That hasn't been going, this is totally, like, there is, Coach Mora, there is some sloppy bodies out west, okay? There are some bodies that are going to need some physical conditioning immediately, ASAP, that are going to need all they can get. So it is, I think it was easier in that aspect, too, because the Big Ten and other leagues, obviously the coaches have been meeting all together for months and months and months, and they had at least a little base of physical conditioning. This will be interesting to watch, too, players
well, that's what,
and how they
yeah,
go forward.
Yeah, that's why the ramp-up time is a little bit longer than other conferences, is that these guys are behind.
And
now, they've been working. Yeah, they've been, they've been working out on their own. Right. They've been doing their 7-on-7. They're throwing. I'm sure they've been getting together as groups and, you know, at parks and things like that and doing the work. But as you know, David, as a player, it's just not the same. It's not the same as being on the field with a coach driving you and physical contact and pushing you to the limits. It's just not the same. So they're going to be further behind. But they're playing other teams that are further behind as well. So it'll all balance out.
Yeah, but Coach,
all
in fairness,
of that is why November 7 was the right decision.
Yeah,
well,
I think so.
But in fairness, guys, they are playing against other teams when it comes to the college football playoff situation. I mean, Coach, you just mentioned they were slow and calculated. Have they been so slow that they didn't leave themselves any wiggle room to get into the college football playoff?
Well, it's not necessarily that the Pac-12 has been slow. As Larry Scott mentioned, there are the state and county regulations in Oregon and in Washington are different. They weren't allowed to move forward. It's like David said, you can't just call and say, hey, listen, you know, I know that everything's shut down, but we want to play football. And they're going to say, okay, you know, you're UCLA or USC or Stanford or Cal or Oregon State, go ahead and play. You know, nothing else matters. It just doesn't work like that out here. So it's not the Pac-12 necessarily that's been holding things back. It's other things. And they're moving carefully. This is, it's an understatement to say it's such a unique year. And we don't have any clue what the landscape's going to look like at the end of this year in terms of who plays how many games. Every week we are seeing cancellations. Notre Dame's not playing this week. Who knows if Alabama's going to play next week or Auburn or, you know, or Michigan or Ohio State. We don't know. And so we just have to wait and see how this plays out. And we know at the end of the year, people are going to make decisions. We're having a national championship. Everyone's going to be fired up about it. There'll be questions. There'll be an asterisk at the end of the year. But it's a unique year. We're all rolling with it the best we can. And we get to see football on Saturday. We get to watch David Pollack tomorrow morning, baby, on TV in Miami. I'm fired up for that.
So Brad, then how sympathetic should the rest of the college football world be to the situations that they've been dealing with when it comes to the playoff conversation?
I don't think the selection committee is going to show sympathy. They're going to put them, you know, on the same field as everyone else, and they're going to look at the body of work. Now, they have fewer games, but I don't think that necessarily means that a team's resume is going to be weaker. What it does is it places more of a premium on each game and the importance of every time out looking as good as you possibly can. You're not going to get a pass for going out there and winning by three against a team that you were supposed to beat by three touchdowns. And so that's one challenge for the Pac-12. The other one is that we hear the selection committee talk all the time about number of wins you have over the top 25. And we could argue whether that's a valid metric. But the fact is they look at that kind of stuff, and especially when you start getting further up. How many games or wins do you have against the top 15? How many teams in the Pac-12 are going to be ranked in that range and only playing seven games? Will there be enough on their resume to make committee members say that they're definitely one of the four best teams? I think that's the biggest thing going against them, is the quality of competition as perceived by people in that committee.
Well, and so circling back around, Fitz, to your question, yeah, they are behind the eight ball. They're not only behind the eight ball, the Big Ten's behind the eight ball. Now, the Big Ten, I think, is I don't consider the Pac-12 and the Big Ten in the same boat, but because the Big Ten took so long to get started, they've put themselves in a situation, too, because they, remember, the Big Ten's going 10 games in 10 weeks. Not going to happen, bro. We know that. It's not going to happen. We've seen that already in college football. Go ask Houston how they feel about playing college football. They're ready, but they can't find a game right now with everything that's going on. So the Pac-12 and Big Ten definitely are starting the season behind the other conferences.
Well, the playoff committee always has an incredibly difficult job, gentlemen, but it is even more difficult this year than we're used to. So we'll see how that plays out moving forward. In the meantime, let's talk to a coach about what this all means for the Pac-12. Pac-12 fans are obviously excited. Pac-12 players are pumped. But Pac-12 coaches also had an incredible day yesterday when they found out they're going to get to do their jobs this fall. Let's talk to one now. USC head coach Clay Helton joins us. Coach, thank you so much for the time. Walk me through that moment when you got to tell your players that they're going to get to play this fall.
Yeah, well, obviously we knew yesterday was the boat, and it was a big day for not only the Pac-12, but for our school and a bunch of kids. And to be able to get that information to the kids yesterday afternoon, you know, I've got three children by birth, 110 adopted sons that I get to see every day. And to be able to give them that news yesterday made me a happy father. To just see the joy on their face that they're going to have the opportunity to compete and do what they love, that's a special moment.
Well, now you've got a limited time to get them ready for the season. So as a coach, what's your biggest challenge now?
Yeah, you know, we've had the opportunity to be on campus since July 6th and really have been training and getting in functional football shape. But now you're looking at a six-week period of time where you're really trying to implement some schemes and go live with them. You know, putting in a new defensive system under Todd Orlando, a new special team system under Sean Snyder, and going from year one to year two in an offensive system under Graham Harrell. That's probably the biggest thing, is the implementation of systems and trying to progress within those systems.
How do you guys approach getting guys in game shape to avoid injury and things like that?
Yeah, you know, we were really progressive in this since July. We totally concentrated on getting our kids in functional football shape, you know, doing the activities and exercises that were needed to make sure that we had joint health and soft tissue health. And now we've got six more weeks that we're allowed to, that we've been given to prepare for that November 7th start. So we're in a really good place here at USC, ready to enter camp here in about 2 weeks from today. And so now, given those 6 weeks, we should be prepared and ready for November 7th.
With the announcement that the Pac-12 is going to play, talking heads like me now get to yell about the College Football Playoff Committee and what should be considered. If I had the opportunity to put you in front of that playoff committee, what would your message to them be?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I love about the college football playoff is everybody gets to present their resume. And we're just fortunate and feel fortunate enough to be able to have the chance to produce a resume, you know, to be able to have a six-game season along with a conference championship to put our best resume forward. We'll worry about our job in producing that resume. And then the college football playoff committee and those that determine postseason play will do their job and determine what resumes look the best and who are the best four teams.
So you mentioned earlier that they're all your kids. You're used to having tough conversations about kids deciding if they want to enter the draft. What's it like as a coach when you need to sit down with kids and talk about COVID-19 and the realistic option that they could choose to opt out? How do you handle that situation?
Yeah, it's a personal decision for each player and each person. And obviously, you want to listen to your players and make sure that they're comfortable with every situation that we're going to do moving forward. And I was really appreciative of our presidents and chancellors being patient and really putting us in the best environment possible for safety and health issues. To be able to gain the patience of letting our infection rate be able to come down in the cities that we play in our geographics, to be able to find Quidel, the antigen testing agency, to be able to test on a daily basis, as well as to study the effects of the heart and be able to put protocols in that if somebody does test positive, that we are able to check their heart to make sure there's no abnormalities, you know, that was very important for us as a conference. And I think it provided some really some feelings of our players that we are safe. And we are secure. We're in the safest environment possible. And I think they appreciated that patience by our presidents and chancellors to get to this point.
Coach, I can't imagine how much is on your calendar getting ready. We appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us. Good luck this season. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate it.
All right, from big-name coach to big-name quarterback, the return of the Pac-12 means the return of Keaton Slovis. We're going to sit down with him. We'll see his thoughts on the Pac-12 getting to play. And also, keep in mind, the Mountain West is getting in on the fun, too. They found a path to the field. Looks like they'll be playing an 8-game schedule. That game schedule will begin on October 24th. Don't want to forget about them getting back into the action as well. Coming up, the Hurricanes riding high because they've got the best quarterback Miami fans have seen in years. We'll get you a sneak peek of game day sit-down with De'Aaron King. That's coming up later in the show. And it just means more this weekend. Well, at least it means more games, more matchups, and the return of the SEC. We'll preview the big SEC slate coming up next on College Football Live.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
College Football Live, we got the Saturday slate. Kyle Trask is the man now. Felipe Franks, remember, transferred to Arkansas. One of the biggest battles to watch this season. Florida and Georgia to see who rises to the top in the SEC East. They'll start their season against Ole Miss. We'll see how that one turns out. Also, got a big ranked versus ranked matchup. The only one of week one. Gives us number 23 Kentucky taking on number 8 Auburn. This is only the second time ever that these two teams have met while both were ranked. Auburn quarterback Bo Nix, happy three of his best receivers are returning, but sad that only one of his starting offensive linemen is back. Next up in the Saturday slate, it's the beginning of the Miles Brennan era, the only quarterback on the LSU roster to have ever thrown a pass in college football. The Tigers return just 5 starters from last year's championship team. That's the fewest of any program, and they start off against Mike Leach and Mississippi State star running back Kylan Hill. I mentioned Georgia earlier. They got a big weekend matchup against Arkansas with huge expectations, but questions about the quarterback position. Remember, expected starter Jamie Newman opted out. Transfer JT Daniels started 12 games for USC in 2018. Coming off a knee injury, though, so no idea what that will look like for them. We always expect greatness from Alabama. They get things kicked off against Missouri. Quarterback Mac Jones gets the opportunity to fill the lofty shoes of Tua. Bama taking on Missouri and new head coach Eli Drinkwitz. Welcome to the SEC that way. And next up, no SEC team had more opt-outs then Vandy with 5, and now they get to start their season taking on a really good Texas A&M team with a really great quarterback in Kellen Mond. Fun fact, Vandy and the Commodores have lost 18 straight against AP top 10 opponents. And sticking with teams in the state of Tennessee, Tennessee signed coach Jeremy Pruitt to a big extension yesterday. My buddy Ramon Foster said on Nashville radio this week that the Vols are going to win 8 games this year. Woo! They'll start it off against the Gamecocks and new offensive coordinator Mike Bobo. So we'll see how that looks for them going forward. All right, so a lot of SEC conversation, obviously, and we've got a great team here to break it down. So, Pollock, you know the SEC as well as anybody. We mentioned LSU earlier. They've got so much turnover. What are your realistic expectations this year for LSU?
I expect them to take a couple steps back, and I'm very curious and very interested to watch their offense because for so long it was the center point of so much frustration for LSU, and does that return? You know, Miles Brennan, the only one that's thrown passes, Joe Brady gone, Joe Burrow gone. Like, how does this offense bounce back? What does it look like this year? It was so much fun and so high-flying, and LSU fans got to have a memorable season forever. Is it going to return? I think it's going to regress by a long shot. How much does it regress all the way back, or does it regress some of the way back and continue there? So, I expect LSU to be a contender in the SEC West. I expect them to finish in the top 3, but I do not expect them to win and have a season like they had last year.
Brad, what are your LSU thoughts?
I think you can make a great argument that no team in the history of college football has ever lost as much from one year to the next as LSU just did from 2019 to 2020. First of all, look at all the players who were drafted, and that includes the number one overall pick, who was their quarterback. Then you look at a couple of other really talented guys, including arguably the best receiver in college football, who opted out. And then you look at coaches, and you've got both Joe Brady and Dave Aranda. So the combination of all that, playing and coaching talent, I mean, it's just way too much to expect them to be anywhere close to what they were last year. I realize they're still loaded with 4- and 5-star players, but they're in a conference where Alabama and Georgia still have more talent than they do. So that's a little bit of an uphill climb. Look, this is something I'm really fascinated to see offensively. How do they approach it? I think Pollock was kind of leaning toward this conversation. Do we see the same aggressiveness that we saw from them last year as far as the percentage of time they throw the ball on first down? They did not take the foot off the pedal. They allowed, you know, Joe Burrow and all those receivers to maximize all of that talent by throwing and throwing and throwing and just being relentless. Will, with Scott Linehan, they continue to still have that approach?
There's no doubt that they're going to look dramatically different. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to be an effective football team on the field. They've got a ton of talent. Yeah, they lost all those starters, and they lost a great quarterback. They've got a relatively inexperienced quarterback coming back, although he's been in the system a while. They lost their great offensive mind. He wasn't the coordinator, great defensive coordinator. And they're going to look different. They're not going to be the same team. They're not going to be as explosive. They're not going to win games the way they did last year. But I think that they'll find a way to win. It's an extremely talented football team. Will they win their division? Probably not. Probably not. But I think they'll be fun to watch. I think it'll be fun to see how they evolve from this week through the rest of the season and how they capitalize on the talent that they do have.
Coach, I got to ask you a quick follow-up here, just to you. When you start talking about passing game coordinator versus offensive coordinator, because LSU fans will point out they have the same offensive coordinator, what's the difference in that role?
Well, listen, it's semantics. I mean, I think we all would probably know that Joe Brady was running things last year. Linehan is a very capable guy, in my opinion. But it's just going to look – they don't have the dudes, man. It's not about coaches all the time. It's about the dudes on the field. And they're not going to have the same guy behind the ball or behind the center. They're not going to have the same guys out at receiver. So they're going to look a little bit different. But I believe this. They have really good coaches. They have really good players. And they're going to find a way to win games. It may not just be the blowouts that we're used to and the excitement, the ball all over the place and the efficiency. But they're going to find the way to win the game.
Well, you mentioned the dudes, and one of the biggest conversations around that will come at the quarterback position. We have several new quarterbacks, as you can see on the graphic here, that we got a ton of quarterback change going around the conference. So, guys, we'll start here with Brad. Brad, when you look at the new quarterbacks in the SEC, who are you most excited to look for?
Most excited? Oh, that's
or
that's
who
a
do you believe in the most?
I, I would, and this is kind of a cop out. I would say that it's Mac Jones because we've seen something of him. Not only did he start four games last year, but we saw him against both Auburn and Michigan late in the season. Take away two pick sixes, which are obviously huge plays. But outside of those two plays, I thought he looked great against two really good defensive teams. And so I think Alabama knows a little bit more what they have at quarterback than, say, LSU and Georgia do. And those, to me, are the really big ones to focus on.
Pollock doesn't like that at all.
Here's what I'll say about that is Florida's still in this conversation, right? Or is it just the three team that we're going to talk about? Because Kyle Trask coming off a season last year where he wasn't even supposed to be the guy playing for a coach in Dan Mullen that produces a high level of quarterback every single year, no matter who it is. So I think Kyle Trask with Pitts coming back at tight end and more playmakers, I think you're going to see another year in the system, a guy being the guy. He's got to be the guy you point to right away in the SEC that says he has a chance to be the best guy in this league, period. And that gives Florida a chance to be in the SEC East, one of the front runners, and possibly being in the SEC championship game and maybe even playing for more at the end of the season.
I thought we were talking about the new
David
guys.
I agree with David that he'll probably be the most experienced and the best quarterback, the guy that I'm most excited to watch. When Bryce Young takes over for Mac Jones, when things aren't going perfect on offense for Alabama,
and you Nick already decides to put... You already benching Mac Jones?
I'm just saying. All right, I got to watch Bryce play a lot, and when they put him in there and you see how mature and how dynamic he is and how poised he is and how confident and how he leads that team, he's going to be the next great Alabama quarterback. You watch.
And Brad, I'm going to try
play
to be
a lot, by the way.
I'm going to try and be a good teammate here, Brad. I didn't set you up well enough to get you on the same.
I'll
fall on
the
sword.
Faces. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll fall on the sword, that one.
But Bryce Young, though, Nick Saban, 3 years in a row, has had to go to a backup quarterback in a big situation. So you better believe Bryce Young is going to play early and often, even if Mac Jones is looking really good, because you never know, especially this year with COVID, you never know what backups you're going to have to call on to start at any position.
Well, go ahead, Paul.
Hey, Fitz, I'll tell you another thing that's going to be exciting, and you guys can speak to this because you've seen it for a long time, Brad, Jim. I think Georgia's finally going to have a guy that's super exciting at the spot. Dwan Mathis, he's a freak now. I mean, he's got insane talent. Remember, a couple years ago on signing day, he was an Ohio State guy going to play with Urban Meyer and those guys in that spread system and fun system where they recruit quarterbacks and they always have high production. Flips, goes to Georgia. Last year has a brain cyst, can't really play, had to take some time away from the game. But you talk about talent, that dude can throw it through a car wash and not get it wet. He's a 4.4, 4.5 athlete, can run. This might be as exciting for Georgia fans as it was for LSU last year. I'm not saying he's going to be Joe Burrow at all. He's not going to be. But I'm saying bringing your offense out of something of the Stone Age that was boring at times, that didn't run their quarterback, and now you got a guy that can. That could be fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about a four-star quarterback commit that's a dual threat. It's going to be much different for Georgia. All right, Brad, I'll set you up better next time. That one's on me. All right, coming up next, we'll take a look at the big game this weekend. Pollock's there. We all know it. Game day's at the site of a huge rivalry game. Florida State taking on Miami. We'll get you a preview. We'll get you what to look for coming up next.
Big trust. Whoa, whoa.
How about those teams?
We dominate. One play at a time. Do something special.
The man, the myth, the legend,
Lamar Jackson.
All right, let's take a look at some of the games not going on this weekend. Notre Dame versus Wake. Not going to happen because of COVID-19 testing. Notre Dame, remember, had 7 players test positive. Also not happening this weekend, FAU versus USF. Big game there for both of those programs. I really wanted to be able to get that one in, obviously, but not going to get that opportunity. Remember, USF played Notre Dame, so this is the trickle-down effect. Also not happening this weekend, Tulsa versus Arkansas State. They couldn't assemble a team. Arkansas State couldn't, I should say, to assemble a team to play safely because of the virus. Also, North Texas versus Houston not happening. Houston, yet again, for the fourth time this season, not going to be able to play because of COVID-19 restrictions. So they continue to be disappointed. Also, new addition to the list, Georgia State versus Charlotte not happening this weekend. That's breaking news due to positive results and contact tracing at Georgia State. So, Coach Moore, we'll start with you. As a coach, when you start talking about multiple cancellations, how do you keep everybody focused when week in and week out they're not getting to play?
Well, it's really hard. There's so much uncertainty. And then there's an anxiety that the players and coaches feel. Are we going to be playing this week? Are we not going to be playing? Is something come up? So obviously you have to be flexible. I also think you have to keep a sense of humor about it. You know, hey, guys, it's different, man. We can't control it. Let's control what we can do. Let's not worry about it. Let's not sweat it. Let's prepare for the next one. If the next one happens, we're ready for it. If it doesn't, hey, you know, we'll have a team activity. We'll do something together. We'll capitalize on it. But if you become uptight and you become anxious as a head coach, then that permeates the rest of your team. And that's not a good thing for those young men. You need to help them through this process because it is very, very difficult on them.
Brad, what are your thoughts on the cancellations?
From a conference standpoint, it is essential that every league is as buttoned up as it possibly can be on all of its tiebreakers. Everything needs to be in writing up front because they're going to see things they've never seen before. You could have a divisional race where two teams in the same division finish with the same record and they didn't play each other head-to-head because the game was canceled. What do you do? What decides it at that point? You know, you could end up, say, in the ACC where they're all playing for second place. Who's going to take on Clemson in the conference championship game? What if two teams are tied in the loss column? One has more wins than the other one, but the team that has the head-to-head advantage had its game against Clemson canceled. You know, so there are all sorts of things that you can see that there are potential for huge controversy. Something like that is going to happen, so the conferences better be ready.
Yeah, by the end of the year, I'm going to feel like Charlie and Always Sunny in Philadelphia, just pointing at the map, trying to figure it all out. We'll see how it goes. All right, speaking of guys that are going to get to play now, we're going to talk to one of them coming up. Keaton Slovis had a big year last year for USC. Now he gets a shot to play this year. We'll sit down and talk to him about what he thinks about everything coming up next, College Football Live. Game day coming at you from Miami. You get the chance to meet Miles Brennan, the LSU quarterback. Let's see what everybody expects from him. You'll get your first real introductions to him. Plus, from the sidelines to the front lines, COVID-19's effect on college football and schedules, players and coaches, it's still unfolding. It's changed the sport in ways few could imagine. Alex Carlton is proof, making the bold decision to go from college coach to nurse, leaving the sidelines of the sport for the front lines of a pandemic. That's a great story you want to check out. And obviously, Nick Saban, Dan Mullen, Herm Edwards, got a lot of coaches that are going to join the show that'll get you some insight on how all of this is being handled from a coach's perspective. That's all coming up tomorrow on Game Day. Make sure you check it out. In the meantime, we got big news from the Pac-12. Remember, this is the breaking news. The Pac-12 is going to play football this fall. The 7-game season will begin the weekend of November 6th. No better way to celebrate the Pac-12 coming back than talking to one of the players affected by it. Let's do that now. Keaton Slovis, absolutely incredible USC quarterback joining us. We got beef, though, at the beginning, man. Like, you know, I like to pride myself on having the best hair of everybody that works in college football here. And you're coming out of the gates with, like, salad that I wasn't ready for. This is a good look, dude.
I appreciate it. You know, I think you got something going pretty well yourself, but, you know, just got a haircut. Had to look good for your show. So,
I like that. You got the little color in it. It's good. So, tell me, like, where you were. Walk me through the moment when you found out that you are going to get to play football this fall.
I was actually at practice, or I guess workouts, and we just got done throwing and lifting. And coach came over to me and said we got good news. And you know, I kind of expected it to happen, or was hoping it was going to happen due to, you know, all the other conferences playing. The Big Ten making the big decision because we were kind of the conference that opted out with them. So by them coming back with us, that kind of helped a lot. But again, super excited to get this ball rolling.
So you just mentioned the Big Ten. What's it been like really realistically for you for the last few weeks watching everybody else play while you guys have been sitting out?
You know, it hasn't been fun. And that's kind of what, you know, jump-started our idea to kind of get the governor's attention and writing our letter to lift those restrictions, the city and state guidelines that, you know, kind of held us back from playing in the beginning. So again, it wasn't fun seeing them playing. Obviously excited that, you know, they got the opportunity, but kind of thinking we should be out there too. So glad we got that done.
You mentioned the letter writing. Who was really spearheading that campaign to get you guys to have your voices heard?
Yeah, it was really just a group of leaders on the team that kind of got together and said, this is something we want to do. And I want to credit Coach Helton and the AD and Mike Bone, as well as Brand Sosna. They all helped us write and craft this letter and allow us to use our voice. And I think that's a big reason why, you know, the Pac-12 kind of acted as quickly as they did, was because they had this this notice from, you know, the California state and city guidelines that, you know, kind of told us that we were going to be able to get back and that they were going to cooperate. And also credit to them for acting fast and being very cooperative with us.
So a lot of us have spoken on behalf of athletes with concern about the long-term effects of COVID. I'm talking to somebody that has to deal with it. Who have you really leaned on to get advice with the lack of knowledge that we have to the long-term effects?
You know, really just everyone in our school that, you know, has ties to the medical community. They've done a great job of, and that's the reason we weren't playing to begin with, was due to their concerns. I think it was with the heart condition. But, you know, the reason that they're letting us play now is because I think their concerns for that have lifted, and the long-term effects they're not as concerned about. Again, I'm not a medical professional, but hearing those doctors and, you know, any medical staff that we have be hopeful is really what we're looking for.
You mentioned you guys have been working out. What's your ramp-up time feel like? How ready do you think you can be for the season?
Coach is talking about 6 weeks, so I think we have enough time to kind of get ready. And we've been throwing and lifting a good amount, but, you know, like I said, we weren't allowed in our weight room for most of the summer. So just being able to get back in there, we should be back in, you know, 6 weeks' time, I think.
So let's be real. You had a phenomenal year last year. What's the extra pressure like for you coming into this season?
You know, I'll look at it that way. Like, there's an extra pressure. You know, I think that we have a great crew coming back, and, you know, just throwing with the guys this fall, just super excited for what they bring to the table and being able to have such talent around me. You know, outside, we're returning everyone except for Pittman, who obviously was a great player for us, but we got depth behind him. And up front, we've got a lot of guys returning as well. So, again, just super excited for this crew and, you know, excited to take this offense to the next step.
And we really appreciate your time, man. Stay healthy, stay safe. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
I'm not sure anybody's going to have better hair all year, but Miami fans are fired up for De'Aaron King. What should we expect from him coming up in this big matchup? We'll break it down next. Let's take a look at today's More Driven Player, presented by Goodyear. That's De'Aaron King and the Hurricanes. They did damage downfield against Louisville last week, something they struggled with against UAB the week prior. King has led Miami to 2 double-digit wins versus FBS teams in the first 2 games of the season for the first time since all the way back in 2001. Here's a little of his sit-down that he did with Game Day's Gene Wojciechowski.
Derek, let's circle back, because it's almost been a year to the day. September 19th, 2019. Do you remember what happened that night?
Was that the two-lane game?
8 back in coverage for Houston. McMillan launches down the middle for McCleskey, and he breaks free!
If Tulane doesn't throw that 53-yard touchdown pass in the last few seconds of that game, are you a Miami Hurricane today?
I think it'd be totally different. At the time, when they threw the touchdown, I had no idea I was going to redshirt, transfer, and any of it. So just that one play kind of changed my whole career.
De'Aaron King was a preseason top 15 Heisman candidate at Houston in 2019. But that loss at Tulane began a chain of events tested King in every possible way. Event number one, Houston head coach Dana Holgorsen made the stunning request that King redshirt for the remainder of his senior season. You went from being a team captain, starting quarterback, to going to the scout team, to sometimes traveling on the road. What was that like for you?
It was tough. Just being a competitor, obviously you want to go out there and play every game you can't possibly play. I see those guys going to war every single weekend, and I'm on the sideline not doing anything. So it was pretty hard.
What is it like to sort of get parachuted and start over in a new place?
I felt like a freshman again. You know, you come in, you kind of wide-eyed. You don't know how things are really going at the time. Then you get in the groove, you get used to it, you get back to your normal self. Everything that I did my freshman year in University of Houston, I have to do it all over again here.
Just 3.5 weeks after his arrival at Miami, D'Eriq received a call from his family in Texas. His 48-year-old father, Eric, had suffered a fatal heart attack. How did you cope with that?
Obviously, I'm still not completely over it. I probably never will be. I think about it every single day. I lean on my family. I have a great family. I'm super, super, super close. My older brother and two older sisters and my mom. We talk every single day, have a group message. So just leaning on those guys and just to help me get through this tough time.
This is a really special night in Miami. When you think about the quarterback who is about to take over the offense for the Hurricanes, he's already a star in the college game.
The bus ride over to the stadium, what was that like for you?
It was a surreal feeling. First game without my dad, so that was on my mind heavy. But other than that, it was a pretty good night.
Here's King back to throw, and now it opens up for him. He will dive for the end zone.
What would you have told your dad about that game?
He would probably have told me a lot of things I need to get better at. just the coach in him. He'll congratulate him on the victory, but then he'll go right into, okay, you got to do this better, you got to do this better. I'm off having fun again. First game playing in a while. I want to be a great leader for this team, and I want to just be successful this year.
Brad, we've seen a lot already from D'Eriq King. Question is, how good does he make Miami? Can they contend in your mind?
I think they can contend for the ACC championship game. I mean, Clemson has set a pretty high bar in that conference. So contending for the conference title, I think that's a little bit of a stretch. But do they look as good as anybody else in that league? And they're not going to be ranked ahead of Notre Dame by a lot of people. But I think they could beat them if D'Eriq King plays well. And look, what he's brought to that offense is just night and day. The last two seasons, Miami fans would cover their eyes when their quarterback would drop back because those guys were just so erratic. Pass protection wasn't always great. You just didn't know what was going to happen. And now D'Eriq King is not only providing opportunities for big plays by putting passes on target. He had a few that were dropped last week against Louisville that would have added to those big numbers. But obviously he has that extra dimension with his legs if nobody's open. So it's just a huge difference what he does with their offense.
I think he's brought great stability to that position, something that they really needed. And, you know, he's good from the pocket. He can get out of the pocket, remain a passer, get the ball down the field accurately on the move. And then we all know that he's dynamic when he takes off and runs. The thing that I like is he's an excellent decision maker. He's tough on himself. After the week one win, he came back and said, I need to be better from the pocket. I need to be more patient. He was in week two. We're going to see him make growth again this week. I agree that they can contend for the championship game. I don't think they're ready yet to beat Cleveland. But one of the things, or two of the things that I love about Miami is I love the way they're running the football. They've got three really good running backs that are doing a heck of a job. And then they're playing solid defense again. They look like the old Canes. They've got some swagger back on defense, are able to rush the passer with four. They can play some man. They understand zones. Their linebackers are good players that run around the field and make plays. So this addition of D'Eriq King was critical, 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 and I think it put him in the conversation again.
So, Coach, let's look at the other side of this matchup. Florida State's going to be without head coach Mike Norvell, who's tested positive for COVID-19. Tough question to ask a coach, but what impact does that really make in the game, not having your head coach in the field?
You know, I don't know. I think it has more impact during the week when you're messaging, when you're running meetings, when you're controlling practice, when you're setting the tempo, when you're trying to create the right mindset. Now, I know I'm sure he's done a lot of that virtual, digitally. He's been in the meetings. He just hasn't been there physically. On game day, you know, he won't be calling the plays. And typically the head coach is responsible for making a lot of the game day decisions that are going to have an effect on the end of the game. So I don't know how this is going to affect him. It's certainly going to affect him. I don't think it'll affect him positively, but I don't know how much of a negative effect it'll have either on game day. He'll have them ready, but game day is different when you're the head coach. They're looking at you. They want to know how to react when things aren't going well or things are going well. Those players, they need to have a leader.
I think the bigger thing for Florida State in this game is going to be offensive line, and this is a broken record for Florida State going back to when Jimbo was still there. Can they protect the quarterback? Because the strength of that Miami defense is the pass rush. FSU didn't do a very good job of protecting James Blackman against Georgia Tech, and if they don't do it here, then he's not going to have much of a chance to be successful. He's been very up and down throughout his career, probably more down. But you can't expect him to excel if he doesn't have time to look for guys. And so for Florida State to keep this game close, and that's been the history of this rivalry, they usually are close. They're going to have to do a better job of just giving him time to make plays.
Well, gentlemen, the hype train has definitely left the station for De'Aaron King. It is going at full speed. Speaking of hype, we've already got hype on the Heisman. It's never too early. We're going to talk about it next. We'll give you some the candidates to look for the Heisman Trophy coming up next. We'll get the guys' thoughts on it.
This Heisman Preview is brought to you by Nissan, premier partner of the Heisman Trophy.
Now let's take a look at the Heisman update brought to you by Nissan. According to DraftKings Sportsbook, not surprisingly, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are tied for the shortest odds to win the Heisman Trophy at 5-2. Shortly behind them is Oklahoma quarterback Spencer Rattler, having a great start to his career there, 6-1 odds. So we'll see how that plays out. One of the other big news and notes from the college football world yesterday is that there is a proposal that bowl games may not require a minimum record, essentially maybe letting everybody play a bowl game. So let's get a little reaction on that. Brad Edwards, what are your thoughts? Should there be a minimum on bowl games?
I think it's fine, you know, just go without one. 2020 is a different kind of year. We all recognize that. I'm not real big on participation trophies, but in this particular case, if you survive this season and you still want to play another game, by all means, let people play.
I agree. Let them play. Let's let everybody play a bowl game. Let's get an extra one out there. The thing that I'm concerned about with bowl games is one of the great things about the bowl game, and I've done this a player as a coach, is kind of a reward for a great season. You get to go spend a week with your teammates in a city. You explore the sites. You go to activities. You have a banquet, all those kinds of things. Are all those things going to be out now? Is it just going to be another game that you fly in for and you play and then you leave? I don't know. I still know this. If you're playing in the Rose Bowl, you're playing in the Rose Bowl, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, well, you're certainly right. But, Coach, you also make a great point. So much of it is about the experience for kids that may never get to a city like that anyway. So it'll be interesting how all of that plays together. But, frankly, guys, I say let them play. Usually I'm with you, Brad. We're not into participation trophies on this show. But let's give everybody a chance in a year that's weird to get at least more tape, more experience, and more fun playing college football. Speaking of fun playing college football, let's take a look at some All-State AFCA. Get it up here. There we go. It's time for a look at the All-State AFCA Good Works team. To see all 22 players on the Good Works team, log on to ESPN.com. Search All-State. Always a really cool opportunity to see some of the kids that are not only playing well, but also doing great things in and around the community as part of that. So be sure to check it out at ESPN.com. All right, guys. This has been a crazy, crazy day. It's been a crazy week, but I think we can all say the same thing. At least everybody looks like right now is getting an opportunity to play. That is one of the most incredible parts of this, right? Like, it feels good that we're going to get some football. Brad, any closing quick thoughts?
I'm just excited to see Lane Kiffin tomorrow, and I want to see him go for it on fourth down a whole bunch of times because that's what he's going to do.
Coach, you don't get any quick thoughts. I'm finishing the show. Coach got to stand on the sidelines. Thanks for hanging out with us. We always appreciate it. Enjoy an incredible weekend of college football. We'll enjoy every single time that we get to watch a game. It can be special this year.